So first I got a question. If I stand out here, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Cool. Because I don't like standing behind me. How's everybody doing this evening? That wasn't a very enthusiastic. Hopefully we'll wake everybody up as we go along. I appreciate the opportunity to have this chance to share a piece of God's Word with you. This is something I've done a lot over the course of my lifetime, but as I've gotten to this part of my life, I don't do it as often. So I look forward to the opportunities to do it when I can. Tonight's lesson, I've entitled Vapor. The subtitle is Life in a World Where Nothing Lasts Forever. I'm going to prepare you right now. This is going to be kind of a bummer for about three quarters of the lesson. But I ask that you hang in there with me because it gets better at the end. But it kind of starts out as a bit of a bummer. But we have to do that sometimes. I lived for 30-some-odd years in Sonoma County, California. And one thing we know well in Sonoma County is wine. I'm not going to talk about wine tonight. I'm going to talk about the other thing we know about really well. It's fog. We have a lot of fog in Sonoma County. Sometimes the fog is so dense that you'd be driving down the freeway and you can't see the car ahead of you because the fog is just that. Oh, you want me to wear this thing?
Oh.
All right.
There you go. Sorry.
That's okay. I bet everybody can hear me now. Now the scary thing is I'm still going to talk loud, so, because that's just me. We have a lot of fog, and sometimes fog is so thick in Sonoma County you can't see the car ahead of you if you're driving down the freeway. But here's the thing about fog. It's not solid. No matter how dense it is, you can put your hand through it and it just disappears ahead of you. Because fog is vapor, water vapor. And vapor doesn't last. And in fact, when we talk about vapor, it's a word that we use oftentimes to talk about things that don't last. In the computer business, for example, if you talk about somebody having a great idea for some software and it never got built. It's called vaporware because it doesn't, you can't really put your hands on it and touch it and use it. It doesn't exist. It's the idea is there, but not the actual product. Here's where the bummer starts. James in James chapter 4, beginning at verse 13, tells us, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil." I am as guilty of that as anybody. You know, we talk about next week I'm going back to the Bay Area and I'm going to make a trip and we're going to do all of these things. Sometimes I forget to say, you know, if the Lord wills, I'm going to do that. Because as James tells us, life is a vapor. For those of us, as we get older, it gets more and more acutely vaporous the older we get. Solomon in Ecclesiastes, the 9th chapter and the 12th verse, said, "Man also does not know his time. Like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them." The fisherman doesn't tell the fish when they're going to get caught. One day they're in the sea, the next minute they're in the net. Birds don't get told by the bird hunter where the snare is. One minute they're free, the next minute they're trapped. And our lives are exactly like that. Moses, in the 90th chapter of Psalms, in the 10th verse, would observe, the days of our lives are 70 years. And if by reason of strength, they are 80 years. Yet their boast is only labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. And in the 12th verse, he continues, so teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Now, some of you younger people in the room might be looking at that and thinking, 70 years, 80 years? That's a century away. I got forever. I want you to understand that you don't know that. That 70 and 80 years is not a guarantee. It is not a promise. It's a rough estimate based on biology. But you're not guaranteed that 70 or 80 years. The year after I graduated from high school, a friend of mine and her fiance went on a hike at Point Reyes National Seashore. They were murdered by a man named David Carpenter, who came to be known in the media as the Trailside Killer. Cindy was 18. Her fiance, Rick, was 19. I had a very good friend and co-worker who was murdered in her home on her birthday while she was on the phone with her mother. She was 26 that day. And 30 some odd years later, her murder remains unsolved. My daughter and I lost her mother to breast cancer. She was 44. You're not guaranteed 70 years, much less 80. Like the fish and like the bird, it could be over at any moment. Not only is your life vapor, but everything you own is vapor. Again, Solomon in Ecclesiastes in the 5th chapter, starting at verse 13, says, there is a severe evil which I have seen under the sun. Riches kept for their owner to his hurt. But those riches perish through misfortune. When he begets a son, there's nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return, to go as he came, and he shall take nothing from his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a severe evil. Just as exactly as he came, so shall he go. And what profit has he who has labored for the wind? All his days he also eats in darkness, and he has much sorrow and sickness and anger. Many people, in our society particularly, strive all of their lives to gain wealth. Here's the secret. Not one of them has ever figured out how to take it with them. Not a penny of it. There's a story about a preacher who was asked to preach the memorial service for a very wealthy brother. And as people were leaving the church building, somebody stopped and asked him, said, I heard he was pretty well off. Do you know how much he left? And the preacher said, he left all of it. That's going to be true for each and every one of us. All of those things that you own, all of those things you prize and treasure, all of those things you think give your life value, they're vapor. Because there's going to come a time when you will be gone and they will be here, or they will be gone and you'll still be here. But either way, they are vapor. Jesus made this point in a parable in Luke, the 12th chapter, beginning of verse 15. He said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of things he possesses." And he spoke this parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?' And he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there I will store all my crops and my goods, and I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you.' And then, whose will those things be that you have provided?" And the Lord ended the parable by saying this: "So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." God doesn't care how big your barn is, because your barn is vapor. In fact, all of the things that please you in this life are vapor. Moses understood that. In Hebrews, the 11th chapter, in the 24th verse, the writer of Hebrews says, "By faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy," notice, "the passing pleasures of sin." There was a lot to enjoy in Egypt, especially for the son of the king's daughter. But Moses understood that those things were vapor, and he chose to pursue something real. John in 1 John, the second chapter, and I know that these three verses, verses 15, 16, and 17, are three verses that most of us can quote, at least the first part of them. But I want us to notice something as we read them. John says, "Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love of the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, comes not from the Father, but from the world." Now I want us to notice this last part. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. Not only are all the things that please you in this life vapor, but your desire for them is vapor. Because there will come a time when the things you think you care about in this life will no longer matter, because you'll be in a place where none of those things exist. This world and its desires are passing away. The only thing that lasts is our relationship with God. Here's one I get tripped up on all the time. Your opportunities to do good are vapor. I always think, you know, here's all these good things I could be doing. I'll do those tomorrow. Jesus in John, the 9th chapter, in the 4th verse, says, "We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work." Paul in Galatians, the 6th chapter, in the 9th verse, would say, "Let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith." As we have opportunity, not when we get around to it, not when it seems to fit into our schedule. Not when we can cram it in and amongst all of the other things that we want to do with our time. As we have opportunity, let us do good. Because you never know whether that opportunity is coming again. And you never know whether you will live to see another opportunity like that one. In fact, all of our opportunities to work for God are vapor. Paul would say in 2 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, beginning at the 1st verse, "We then, as workers together with him, also plead with you not to receive the grace of God in vain. For he says, 'In an acceptable time I have heard you, and in the day of salvation I have helped you. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation.'" Preachers often use this passage as an invitation. I know I've done it. But notice that Paul is not writing to or about people who need to hear the invitation. He is speaking to and about people who are workers together with him. And so Paul, as one of God's workers, is speaking to his fellow workers not to receive the grace of God in vain. How is it that we receive the grace of God in vain? By not doing those things we have opportunity to do when we have opportunity to do them. Why? Because now, he says, is the accepted time. Now is the day of salvation. These are words we ought not to aim at people outside of Christ as much as we ought to aim them at ourselves and saying, what am I doing with today's acceptable time? What am I doing with the day of salvation? Because I'm not guaranteed another one like today. The writer of Hebrews in the third verse, of the third chapter in the 12th verse, would put it this way. "Beware, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end. While it is said, 'Today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion.'" Exhort one another daily while it is called today. Sometimes we look at that word and say, well, I can't exhort anybody. I'm not a preacher. That's not what that means. If you can speak a word of encouragement to a brother or sister, you are exhorting them. If you can speak a word of comfort to a brother or sister in their hour of need, you are exhorting them. And what the Hebrew writer here is saying is those opportunities are always before you, but use them while they're here because you only have today. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. The opportunity that you miss to encourage a brother or sister today could leave them hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. The word that you have to speak might be just the word a brother or sister needs to hear to step back from the edge of the cliff. You might be the one who can say just what they need to hear to get them back on the path. But you don't know if you can say it to them tomorrow. Tomorrow might be too late. They might be lost tomorrow. So do it today while you have that opportunity. I told you that most of the lesson was going to be a bummer, and I think you've kind of seen that, but here's the good news. The good news is there's life beyond vapor. In 2 Corinthians, the 4th chapter, beginning at verse 16 and continuing into the 5th chapter in the first verse, Paul says, "Therefore we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, even though our outward man is vapor, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. For we know that if our earthly house, this tent, is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. This house may be vapor, but God has prepared one that is eternal." And that's where our focus needs to be. That's the direction upon which we need to set ourselves each and every day. Because the fact of the matter is, we don't know whether today is just another day or whether today is the last day. I think Bruce said in a lesson not too long ago, there are people that didn't get up this morning, who had no idea that was going to happen. One day that might be us. And we don't know when that day is going to be. So we need to focus ourselves less on this life of vapor, where everything's temporary, and focus ourselves on the life of permanence that is yet to come. Nothing lasts in this life. If you've lived long at all, you have seen the truth of that. Things don't last. People don't last in the worldly sense. Nothing you own, none of the things that pleases you, not even your own life itself, none of those things will last. Everything here is vapor. So the question then is, if you know that, if you know that, as Solomon said, your days are numbered, if you know that the opportunities that you have to do good for others are limited, and if you know that your opportunity to connect with God in this life will not last forever, how are you going to live? That's a question that each of us has to answer for ourselves. But I hope that the more aware we are that our lives and everything that surrounds them are vapor, the more that we realize that, the more that we determine to stay on the path toward that permanent, eternal home that God in Christ has prepared for us. It's easy, and we all do it, to get caught up in the things of this world. as though those were the things that really matter. I want to encourage you this week, if God gives us the week, I want to encourage you to take a step back from focusing on the fog, from focusing on the vapor, and focus more firmly on what is eternal and permanent and real. It may be that you're here tonight and the realization that your life of vapor has put a call to action on your heart. You know, sometimes preachers get accused of preaching lessons like this to scare people. It was not my intention at all. However, if you needed that scare, we got water right over here. And if you need to use it, somebody will get in there and dunk you. But looking around the room, I think it is probably far more likely that all of us might be thinking a little bit more about the reality of the vaporous nature of our lives and thinking, you know, there's some things I need to do better while I have time to do them. There are things that I need to do for others while they and I are still around for me to do them. There are some things I need to do in my service for the Lord that I need to get right, that I need to fix, that I need to do better. That's just a fancy way of saying repentance. And if it's on your heart that you need to do that, then you should do that too. And if you need encouragement, exhortation, prayers of your brothers and sisters, we're here for that as well. Whatever your need might be, won't you come as we stand and sing the song that Sam's chosen for us?